This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. Welcome to the Tuesday edition of the Noon Business Hour, sponsored by and presented by the Village of Bedford Park. For Cisco Cotto, I'm Jim Goodis. And let's talk more about those home numbers as we join Gus Fauché, the chief economist at PNC Financial Services in Pittsburgh. So, Gus, what in the world's going on in the home market, and why does it stay so hot?
So there are just a lot of buyers out there, and they're drawn in by people wanting to move into homes because of the pandemic, and then also record low mortgage rates at around 3%. So we see sales strong for single-family home sales. We're also strong for condos and co-ops, and I think it's just a matter of people wanting to purchase a home and mortgage rates being low, so they're moving into the market.
Is there anything right now that looks like it could derail this at all, or does this look like it's just going to keep going?
Well, the big thing is prices. We've seen prices go up 11.5% over the past year or so. So obviously, even with low mortgage rates, it is getting more expensive to purchase a home. So at some point, I think that the high prices will deter some buyers. But inventories are very tight right now. There's not many homes for sale given the demand, and so that's helping to push up prices.
Gus, what's the advice for the sellers? What's the advice for the buyers?
Well, certainly I think this is a seller's market right now. So if you are looking to sell your home, you should be able to get a very good price for it. In terms of buyers, they may want to hold on until things cool down a little bit. Yes, mortgage rates may move somewhat higher over the next couple of years ago, but I would expect that price growth is going to weaken as we see more inventory come on the market. So for people who are buying, if they don't need to buy right now, they might just want to hold off until things settle down a little.
I'll maybe expand on that a bit, and I don't know if there is anything else, but what's the biggest mistake right now that sellers are making? What's the biggest mistake right now that buyers are making?
I think in terms of the biggest mistake that sellers are making, they can be picky. They may want to keep their house on the market a little bit longer in an effort to secure a higher price. There are bidding wars that are taking place because of limited supplies, because of that strong demand. In terms of buyers, maybe they should be, if they really need a home now, they should be aggressive. But if they don't need a home, then if they're just looking to move eventually at some point, then maybe they should hold off, wait till supply picks up a little bit and there's a wider range of homes to choose from, as well as perhaps a little bit less pressure on prices.
Is this a bit of a surprise that we've seen such strength in the housing market, or is it just with everything as it stands right now, it's just sort of unusually in this pandemic, the perfect storm for a successful market?
I think it's more the latter. Mortgage rates are extremely low right now. 30-year fixed mortgage rate is around 3%. That's at an all-time low. And then I do think that there are people who want to move out of the city or are looking to purchase a single-family home because of the pandemic, and so that's increased demand. And then for those people, in generally, we do have high unemployment right now, but that tends to be among workers in lower-wage industries. So it's people who are kind of in their prime earning years, who are in well-paying jobs, who tend to be less likely to be unemployed right now. So demand hasn't fallen quite as much as we might have expected with that unemployment rate of above 8%.
That's Gus Fauché, who is the chief economist at PNC Financial Services in Pittsburgh. Gus, always great to get your perspective on what's going on, especially in the housing market. Developers at the old post office in Chicago are revealing a massive rooftop park at a time when the future of downtown office space is unclear. And to talk about that, we welcome Danny Ecker, a reporter with Crane Chicago Business. So, Danny, let's first talk about this new park and an old spot in Chicago.
Yeah, it's a pretty striking backdrop for a rooftop park. 3.5 acres stretches the entirety of the old post office, which is obviously a huge building in itself. It's 3 blocks long. It's got a basketball court and paddle tennis and a quarter mile running track and a bar and a restaurant. I mean, it's a pretty impressive amenity for this building that was really on fire the last year or so with, before the COVID, with leasing and bringing a lot of new companies there. So this was one of their finishing touches. And unfortunately for them, that it's a different world today than it was a year ago when they were signing companies like Uber and Walgreens and Ferrara Candy to their tenant list.
Well, looking ahead, as the economy does eventually recover, as people do come back downtown, some already are, is this simply going to attract people to the old post office, or could this be a bit of an anchor for other parts of the area and make it more attractive to neighboring buildings as well?
Well, certainly, this rooftop deck is only for use by tenants of the building, so it's not a public park in any way. But it absolutely could be a differentiator. I mean, there's a lot of renewed emphasis on having space to spread out and fresh air, during these times. And so, the post office, the developers that overhauled the building, have already leased up 80% of the building. But as they try to fill up the rest, this is a nice thing to be offering. And as far as the southwest corner of the loop goes, I mean, the post office really was sort of seeding this renaissance of an area that really hasn't historically been an office destination, and now it's becoming that. BMO Harris is just a kitty corner from the post office is anchoring a new office tower that's going up next to Union Station. So certainly the post office, with striking details like this one, is anchoring what is a rebirth of the Southwest Loop.
But is this something that is this easily copied, or is it unique to the old post office that you can do something like this?
Well, very few buildings have the kind of footprint that this building does. The developers claim it's the largest private rooftop deck in the country. And it's just a very it's rare that you have the space to be able to do something like this outdoors. I mean, obviously, companies love outdoor decks and patios and ways that their employees can hang out and build camaraderie. But certainly, nothing in Chicago is like this. And, as the developers would say, probably nothing else in the country can rival this.
Did you get a chance to see it up close firsthand? And if so, what are your impressions?
I did. I walked it. It's a pretty cool place to play a game of pickup basketball. That's for sure. It's not too many places you can play, and you're shooting a 3-pointer. Your backdrop is a Willis Tower. It's kind of it's an interesting thing if you know anyone who works there, and eventually once people are more actually working downtown, it'd be a cool thing to see. And I think they're trying to host events up there too, private events that can be done up there. So. It's a very cool backdrop, and I think they're hoping that it's a differentiator that makes them stand out from competition, because there's a lot of options right now if you're a company looking for office space downtown.
Danny Ecker, reporter with Crane Chicago Business, thank you so much. Up next, Tesla says it's developed a new type of battery cell, but the production side's still a question mark.
Your best stock option. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Tesla says it's developed a new kind of battery cell, but there are some questions surrounding it. We're joined by Paul Hochman, the president of Humongous Media and the former tech editor for the Today Show in Cambridge, Massachusetts. So what's going on with Tesla and batteries, Paul?
that's a great question. The answer is everything. This is battery week as far as Mr. Musk is concerned. In other words, he's announcing, as he does annually, new technologies, promises, things that may or may not happen. But nonetheless, it's now been proven a bad idea to count them out. And specifically, a whole bunch of patents have been applied for. And one of the most interesting is probably one of the least technically, most people think it'd be the least technically difficult. And that is a tab that connects existing Tesla batteries to the motors that run the car. And the tab, believe it or not, the thing that conducts electricity from the battery to those motors in the car, in some cases four of them, is actually a very technically complex thing to do. And what he's done is created what they are calling a tin battery. And what that means is a battery that looks like a tin. And it basically directs energy from the battery to the motors without that tap. If he can pull that off, sounds like a basic thing, but if he can pull that off, the manufacturing costs of Teslas plunge. And result is his profitability goes way up. So that's one development that's pretty exciting for him.
Well, anytime you've got a connector involved in technology of any sort, that can always often be the weak link in the chain. But despite this, how are things looking? I mean, can we say at this point, is there still a lot of reason for optimism for Tesla, or is this or other issues leading to some concerns?
No. I think the optimism is fully enforced here. And again, you know, you're playing seriously interesting odds here. But one of the reasons for that optimism is because one of the other things they're thinking about doing is removing cobalt from what is currently an NCA or nickel cobalt aluminum electrode or battery. And here's the thing. If you do that, you cut out a hugely expensive component. So once again, the tab goes away, that reduces its cost. You take out cobalt. People are concluding, experts are concluding, that the kind of battery that he would make in its place, which is nickel manganese cobalt, nickel manganese battery, would actually be a 1.6 million kilometer or 1 million mile battery, something that ostensibly, at least on paper, would last 75 years. So this and other developments is really, and it's all going to be made in the United States. He doesn't want to depend on Panasonic anymore. So in a nutshell, these terafactories that he's considering making are going to make them independent and much more profitable.
Now, batteries, of course, used in a lot of things. Is any of this technology that that Musk is developing with Tesla, is that also, can it be used, say, in electronic devices, phones, tablets, computers, anything else?
I would urge you to think bigger, because the answer is yes. In fact, one of the biggest changes that's going to happen when it comes to power delivery generally, and not just in devices that you hold in your hand, but in homes. One of the biggest challenges is solar, which has proven to be very, very efficient. It's getting extremely inexpensive. Is once the sun goes down, obviously, there goes your source of power. Well, if you have extremely high efficiency batteries, a couple of them sitting next to your house, all the excess energy that was developed by that panel is now stored for nighttime use. And he is absolutely selling that as a very high profit margin device. There's $4,000 batteries being sold by Tesla right now. You can buy and put them in stacks if you want next to your house, store the solar energy you generated, and now run it completely off the grid. So homes are the next big environment for Tesla products.
Paul Hochman, the president of Humongous Media and former tech editor for the Today Show. Thanks a lot.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. For Cisco Cotto, I'm Jim Goodis. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. The United States hits a bleak milestone in coronavirus deaths. A special report from CBS News next. In Travel Tuesday, with the Chicago quarantine order expected to again include Wisconsin, we'll explore fall or color trips here in Illinois. Credit card limits are being cut, and it's sometimes coming without warning. Right now on Wall Street, the Dow is ahead, as is the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ. We are expecting a mix of sun and clouds today, hazy skies heading up to 80. It's 12:31.
CBS News Special Report. The U.S. has just reached a new COVID milestone. 200,000 people in this country have died of the coronavirus. CBS's Elaine Cobb.
Infections are on the rise in more than 20 states as the U.S. continues to lead the world in both total confirmed cases and deaths. That according to figures from the Johns Hopkins University.
Democrats are blaming President Trump for the rising numbers. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer.
The president said the virus affects virtually nobody. He also said, if you take the blue states out, we're at a very low level. He also said, it is what it is. This is our president.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi at the Washington Monument, members of the COVID Memorial Project, have planted 20,000 small U.S. flags.
And these flags are indicative not only of the lives lost, but of the families left behind and suffering.
CBS News Special Report. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
And a reminder, if you're working remotely or anytime you're home, just ask your smart speaker to play WBBM for all the latest developments.
An economy of words. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Well, the markets are now, at least the three major indices seem to all now be in positive territory. And we're joined by Bill Stone, the Chief Investment Officer at Stone Investment Partners in Philadelphia. So, Bill, let's talk about what's driving the markets today.
It looks like just a big picture in terms of some, you know, frankly, bounce in some of these sectors that have seen some sell-off. So I use example of, you know, technology and consumer discretionary, particularly the internet like Amazon, that have kind of sold off since early September are really lifting the market today.
And let's talk a little bit more about yesterday in the sense of what happened. And is there really any reason for concern, or was this kind of a good thing to happen in a way for the market?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, it sounds strange, but I think there is a little bit of concern creeping in terms of the COVID numbers. Not so much, you know, and just had the report. You're seeing some move up here in the States. It is particularly some really big numbers coming out of Europe. And I think the worry is because they're seeing some more shutdowns and such that may, you know, show up here eventually. The numbers aren't showing that yet here, but certainly that plays on worries that you might see some weight on economic growth going forward. I think most people are of view we don't have another full-out shutdown, but again, as you see different areas of the country will have more shutdowns, or let's even say the world. So some of that, I think, showed up in terms of to start the week, but at least for right now, we've moved back up. But I think interesting is today, a lot of the names that are doing well or the sectors are not in the hole, but a lot of them are kind of that work from home, right? Or at least the ones that on the margin don't get hurt as bad from continuing issues with COVID.
So what are you looking at in terms of some maybe not as well-known good plays in the market and maybe some things that people might be tempted to look at and maybe should avoid or at least hold off on for now?
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think one of the places where I continue to look is higher dividend stocks. They've started to perform better here since kind of with that beginning of early September. I do think over the longer run, you're probably going to see some better performance relative out of those just because, you know, it doesn't take much to look around. There's nowhere to get income. Much of anywhere, the stock market's actually, oddly enough, the place with the highest kind of yields and income. Obviously, it comes with the risk and the volatility of stocks, but I think that's probably a place to consider. I'll be honest, I'm still not, you know, even though it's downtrodden, and you always like to look at places that are having, or I don't know, look at places, look for opportunities where maybe they've sold off too much. I still am not really excited about weighing into energy stocks too much. You know, there may be some opportunity in some of the integrated large oils eventually, but it's really a place where I probably still avoid at the moment.
That's Bill Stone, the Chief Investment Officer at Stone Investment Partners in Philadelphia. Always great to get your perspective on the markets, Bill. Thank you. Up next in Travel Tuesday, getting the best of fall colors right here on in Illinois, as we continue with the WBBM Noon Business Hour, presented by the Village of Bedford Park.
News that makes you money. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Travel Tuesday, with the COVID rate in Wisconsin surging and the state expected to be put back on Chicago's travel quarantine order. You may want to stay in state as you seek out fall colors. And let's get some direction from Cindy Richards, the editor-in-chief of TravelingMom.com in Chicago. Well, Cindy, it's something else that could get messed up by COVID. A lot of families take annual trips up to Wisconsin to see the fall colors. So if they can't go there or if they don't want to go there, what are some options maybe a little closer to home?
Well, I have a lot of ideas, and my first thoughts are to actually head north, but not quite into Wisconsin. You know, the fun things to do in the fall are picking apples, right? And some people think corn mazes. They're not my thing, but I know a lot of people think corn mazes are a lot of fun. And the Richardson corn maze in Spring Grove claims to always be the biggest in the world. I don't know who measures that, but they're very intricate and really artistic corn mazes. And so that's an option. And nearby, or not too far away in Poplar Grove, is the Edward Apple Orchard, which is always fun with kids to pick apples, especially because, you know, you go in there and you can eat your way through an apple orchard while you're putting the other ones in the bucket.
Yeah, that's always the part about eat one, pick one, eat one, pick
exactly.
One. It's kind of fun. Now, one of the things that I think is kind of cool about this is if you do stay closer to home, you've got more time to actually experience what it is you're going to see rather than spending more time in the car getting to and coming back from Wisconsin. And even, you know, just little day trips, maybe north and northwest of the city, you know, those might be ideal this time of year where you can get some fall colors and maybe have a little extra time to do some other fun things.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, I always recommend that for day trips, you really don't want to go much further than about 90 minutes away because otherwise you're spending most of your day in the car. But if you've got a little more time, if you can do like a weekend trip, one of my favorite things to do in the fall is the Great River Road Scenic Byway. It's up and down the Mississippi, so you could drive the entire Mississippi on these roads alongside of it. But there's a section that's in northwest Illinois by Galena and to the Quad Cities, and I think it's just beautiful. It's up on the bluffs, and you have the trees on one side that are in these incredibly brilliant colors, and then you have the river on the other side. So whichever way you want to look out the window, that's something fun to see.
Now, if you've got a little time or you have some days off to burn or something, and you want to really enjoy something that's spectacular, you know, it's a drive. It's still in Illinois, but it's a drive. It's way downstate, and you're going to get there and think, I'm not in Illinois anymore, and actually you are. It's really gorgeous. Tell us about it.
It is. It's so beautiful. The Shawnee National Forest, it's about 5 hours south, all the way down in the tip of Illinois. But it's our national forest in Illinois, and it is gorgeous in the fall. You want to be careful. You know, this fall is a little tricky with the weird weather that we've been having, but you can check any of a number of fall foliage predictors that you can find online. The one I always go to is the Smoky Mountains one. We have a link to it from a story on travelingmom.com about Midwest fall foliage trips, and it'll tell you when peak seasons are expected. And southern Illinois, it'll be mid to late-ish October is what they're predicting at this point. But you get down there, and the National Forest is beautiful. It's full of hiking trails, and you can go camping, and you can lose yourself literally 4 days in nature and not even feel like you're still in Illinois. You're absolutely right about that.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. I think anybody who enjoys nature and just beautiful wooded scenery and rock formations and all of that, you know, Shawnee is really the place to go. Plus, there's some really cool B&Bs and places to stay along the river, and it's just a lot of fun down there.
You know, that's a really good point, and one thing I wanted to make sure everybody hears is because things are so unpredictable right now, wherever you're going to go, whenever you're going to go, always check the website or even pick up the phone and make a phone call before you get there to find out if there's any rules. It could be limited capacity. You might be required to wear a mask or not. So you just want to call before you go anywhere, even if you're just planning a day trip to an apple orchard. You should call ahead just to make sure what their COVID rules are before you go. You don't want to get disappointed after you drove for 90 minutes.
Cindy, that's why we have you on the Noon Business Hour, because you always have great advice. Cindy Richards, the editor-in-chief of TravelingMom.com. And join us at this time tomorrow for Personal Finance Wednesday. Still to come, tracking the latest changes in the credit card game.
Buy, sell, listen. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Credit card companies are cutting customer limits, and cardholders are sometimes the last to know. Let's hear from Ted Rossman, an industry analyst at creditcards.com in New York. So tell me about this, Ted. People finding out that their limits and such are being changed, and how do they find out, and why is it a problem that they're finding out this way?
Yeah, that's right. This is something I've been hearing a lot about lately. It's really all about risk management. And these credit card lenders are very nervous during the pandemic because there's so much uncertainty about the economy and jobs, and they're worried they might not get paid back. So a lot of them are proactively cutting their users' credit limits. And a lot of the times people are finding out either with a letter in the mail, or maybe it's an email or a text message, or sometimes it's even that their card gets declined at the point of sale. People don't realize how much latitude these card companies have to reset their limit.
So What happens if you do find, I mean, for example, you pointed out a great example. You're going to go buy something. You think, well, I've got room on my card. And suddenly you go and there's no room on your card. Can you also run into issues where maybe if suddenly you find yourself in excess of your limit, that you're going to face additional fees, that sort of thing? What are some of the problems that are related to all of this?
They can't charge you a fee until 45 days after they've notified you of the new limit, but it can definitely curtail your purchasing power, and it can definitely hurt your credit score. That's actually probably the biggest factor here, which is your credit utilization, credit you're using divided by credit available to you. So let's say you owe $4,000 and you have a total limit of $10,000. You're using 40%. That's not so bad. Be better to keep it below 30, but still, 40% is not so bad. But what if they cut your limit in half, and now you owe $4,000 and you have a limit of $5,000? Well, now you're using 80% of your available credit, and you're dangerously close to maxing out that card. That could really hurt your credit score.
All right. So what should people do, even if, because obviously in some cases, you don't see this coming. So is there anything people should be doing to can they proactively protect themselves somehow?
On the front end, try to use all of your cards, because sometimes this happens on dormant cards. You haven't used it in 6 months or a year. Use it for a small purchase, pay it off. That may be enough to trick the system. Obviously, also avoid bad habits like maxing out cards and paying late. That'll definitely get you into trouble. If this does happen to you, and sometimes it does, despite the best of intentions, ask the company to reverse the cut. That actually worked in my personal experience, and I've heard some other people saying the same thing. Or if that fails, maybe ask another lender for a higher limit. That can at least mitigate the damage to your credit score. Finally, if you can, maybe throw in some extra payments in the middle of the month. That will help improve this utilization ratio. So even if you're stuck with a lower limit, if you can put more money towards that card, including in the middle of the month, that can help you.
Ted Rossman, industry analyst with CreditCards.com out of New York. Ted, thank you for those great tips, especially if you find yourself in this somewhat surprising situation of your credit limit is cut. You'll find past programs and later today a podcast of this hour at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Radio.com app.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.